Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is, a current events program from VOA Learning English. Every day, we bring you news and information about our world. And we tell it all to you in easy-to-understand American English. Today, we hear about Asian Americans and some of the issues important to that diverse ethnic group. As we will hear, it is not surprising that immigration is an important issue for Asian American voters. But it is not the only one. We begin with the experiences of a former lawmaker, An Joseph Gao, who is a member of the Republican Party. Jim Tedder has the story.
An Joseph Gao felt uneasy when his Republican colleagues made comments about immigrants. Gao was a Republican congressman from 2009 to 2011 in a Democratic district of Louisiana. He immigrated to the U.S. in 1975 from Vietnam when he was a child. He says he sometimes heard comments from his Republican colleagues that he considered anti-immigrant and insensitive. "It's been 6 years, so I don't really remember the specifics," Gao said. "But I just remember thinking that some members were being insensitive, not recognizing that there was an immigrant, me, in the room with them." Gao, the first Vietnamese-American elected to Congress, said he continues to hear comments about too many immigrants from some Republican candidates. Meanwhile, Democrats are picking up a larger share of Asian American voters. It is because of the anti-immigrant talk from Republican politicians and Republican opposition to immigration law changes, says Gao and other Asian American leaders. In 2012, Asian Americans gave 73% of their votes to Democratic President Barack Obama, according to the National Election Poll. That's more than twice the percentage Democratic President Bill Clinton received in 1992. Gao, a lawyer, came to the United States in 1975. He and his brother fled Vietnam after the communists won the Vietnam War. Older Vietnamese tend to favor the Republican Party because it is seen as more anti-communist than Democrats, he says. Gao said he also favored Republican views on limited government. But Gao, 48, said younger Vietnamese are trending more Democratic. Comments by Republicans that sound anti-immigrant turn younger voters toward Democrats, he said. Joseph Cho, 20, a Harvard University student, recently questioned Republican Donald Trump during a New Hampshire meeting. "Are you from South Korea?" Trump asked. Cho replied that he was born in Texas and raised in Colorado. And Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee tweeted this about Democrat Bernie Sanders: "I trust Bernie Sanders with my tax dollars, like I trust a North Korean chef with my Labrador," he tweeted. Those comments tell Asian American voters that Republicans don't care about them, said S.B. Wu, the former lieutenant governor of Delaware.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. We'll be back after a short break. In the first part of our show, Jim Tedder told us about An Joseph Gow's experiences as an immigrant to the United States, and later as a lawmaker. Next, we hear from S.B. Wu. He is a physicist and former lieutenant governor in the eastern state of Delaware. Wu formed the 80-20 National Asian American Political Action Committee. His group works to make sure Asian Americans vote for its endorsed candidate. Wu says Asian Americans are likely to support the Democratic Party's candidate for president next year. But he said Democrats should not take their support for granted. Many Asian Americans are critical of college admission policies that they consider unfair to Asian American students. Political observers think these policies could influence more Asian Americans to vote for Republican candidates in the next election. Jim Tedder has more.
Many Asian Americans believe some elite universities limit the percentage of Asian American students, Wu said. On this issue, the politics favor Republicans, Wu said. Democrats are seen as more supportive than Republicans of affirmative action policies, he said. Such policies are designed to ensure all races and ethnic groups are represented in student bodies. Asian American students are high achievers, Wu said. Efforts to equalize ethnic and racial representation at colleges mean worthy Asian American students are denied admission, Wu said. Harvard University and other Ivy League schools deny their admission policies discriminate against Asian American applicants. In fact, within its holistic admissions process, and as part of its effort to build a diverse class, Harvard College has demonstrated a strong record of recruiting and admitting Asian American students, said Robert Giuliano, Harvard University's general counsel. He said Asian Americans make up 21% of Harvard undergraduates. Another factor that could reverse the trend of Asian American support for Democrats is income. Higher-income voters tend to support Republican candidates, who tend to favor lower taxes. And the median income for Asian American households in 2009 was $65,469, compared to $51,863 for white households, and $38,039 for Hispanic households, according to Census Bureau statistics. The importance of the Asian vote is increasing. The Asian American population is expected to more than double from 15.9 million in 2012 to 34.4 million in 2060, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. The Asian American share of the U.S. population is expected to increase from 5.1% to 8.1% during that period. The Pew Research Center broke down the Asian American population from the 2010 census this way: 4 million from China, 3.4 million from the Philippines, 3.2 million from India, 1.74 million from Vietnam, 1.7 million from Korea, 1.3 million from Japan, 409,000 from Pakistan, and 277,000 from Cambodia.
Thank you, Jim. That's our program for today. Keep listening for a new health report about the effects of smoking in China. Then learn about American history on our history program, The Making of a Nation. I'm Mario Ritter. Thank you for joining us on As It Is.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. If you are a man living in China and smoke, you may want to stop. That is because 1 in 3 of all the young men in China will die from smoking cigarettes or other tobacco products. Researchers reported their findings in the Lancet Medical Journal. The report says about 2/3 of young Chinese men become cigarette smokers, and most start before they are 20 years old. Unless they stop, about half of them will eventually be killed by their habit. The researchers conducted 2 large countrywide studies on the health effects of smoking. The first study took place in the 1990s and involved about 250,000 men. The second study was launched only recently and is continuing. This study involves about 500,000 adults, both men and women. Researchers say that in China, the number of deaths each year resulting from tobacco use will rise from about 1 million in 2010 to 2 million in 2030. They warn that the number will rise to 3 million by 2050. Researchers say there is no silver bullet to make these numbers go down, meaning there is no easy answer to make the problem go away. People need to stop smoking. China smokes more than 1/3 of the world's cigarettes. It also has 1/6 of all smoking-related deaths worldwide. The story is different with Chinese women. It seems not many women are smoking in China today. 10% of women born in the 1930s were smokers. But among those born in the 1960s, only about 1% smoke. And the rates of death by cigarette among women have also dropped. But that could change. Researchers note that smoking now seems more fashionable among Chinese women. Some women think it makes them seem more appealing. Richard Pido is a professor at the University of Oxford. He helped to write the report on smoking. He said increasing the price of cigarettes may be one way to reduce smoking rates. He said that over the past 20 years, tobacco deaths have been decreasing in Western countries, partly because of price increases. For China, he adds, a large increase in cigarette prices could save tens of millions of lives. More information about our quoted expert, Richard Pido, can be found on the website for the University of Oxford. There it says Richard Pido's investigations into the worldwide health effects of smoking have helped to change national and international attitudes about smoking and public health. He was the first to describe clearly the future worldwide health effects of current smoking patterns. Mr. Pido was knighted by Queen Elizabeth in 1999 for services to epidemiology. In 2010 and 2011, he received the Cancer Research UK and the British Medical Journal Lifetime Achievement Award. I'm Anna Mateo. In your social circles, do many men or women smoke? Let us know in the comments section.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. By 1863, America's northern states and southern states had been fighting a bitter civil war for 2 years. Both sides felt the pressure of the costly struggle. The South was beginning to suffer from a lack of supplies and men for its armies. The North was beginning to suffer from a lack of fighting spirit. This week in our series, Larry West and Tony Riggs describe an anti-war movement that was growing.
Many Americans in northern states did not support the war policies of Union President Abraham Lincoln. Some said openly that they did not care who won the war. They just wanted to be left alone. Coal miners in Pennsylvania protested against a law drafting men into the Union Army. They rioted and attacked officials who tried to take them. Soldiers were sent to Pennsylvania to put down the riots. Farmers in Ohio also protested. They refused to be drafted. They attacked soldiers who were sent to arrest them. The worst anti-war riots, however, took place in New York City.
On July 13th, 1863, a crowd formed outside a New York draft office. Inside, Army officials were choosing the names of men who would be taken into the Army. Each name was written on a separate piece of paper. The papers were mixed together in a big box. The officials then began to remove the papers, one at a time. They made a list of the names. These were the men of New York who must go off to fight. On that day, however, the list was never completed. The crowd outside the draft office became louder. There were shouts of protest against the draft and against the Civil War.
Suddenly, a stone crashed through the office window. Then another, and another. The Army officials escaped, but a policeman inside could not get away. The rioters beat him badly. Then they set fire to the draft office and several buildings nearby. The riot spread across the city. The riot began as a political protest against the draft. Poor men opposed the draft because it permitted rich men to escape military service. The law said a man who was drafted could stay out of the army by doing one of two things. He could pay the government $300, or he could pay another man to serve in his place. If a drafted man could not do either thing, then he must join the army or be shot as a deserter.
In the wartime economy of the North, prices were rising much faster than wages. Even a man with a good job had a difficult time feeding his family. It was impossible for him to pay the government $300 or pay someone else to serve for him in the army. Poor men protested against the law. They said it was unfair. "It's a rich man's war," they cried, "but a poor man's fight. The rich man's money against the poor man's blood."
There was something else that deeply troubled working men in the North. anti-war activists told them that the war was not being fought to save the Union, but to free Negro slaves. The activists said the freed Negroes would move north and take jobs away from whites. Many men believed this. They said they would not fight.
Then, on July 13th, the angers and fears of working men in New York exploded. Their attack on the draft office that day was just the beginning. The violence lasted 3 days. The rioters beat many policemen to death. They beat, burned, and hanged every Negro they could find. They also killed many whites who tried to protect the Negroes. By the time soldiers stopped the rioting, 1,000 persons had been killed.
The leaders of the anti-war movement in the North were members of the opposition Democratic Party. They wore on their coats a copper penny showing the head of a Native American Indian. This gave them the name Copperheads. One important Copperhead was a former congressman from Ohio, Clement Vallandigham. Vallandigham made a speech criticizing the Union government. He was charged with violating a military law that banned such criticism. He was arrested.
The former congressman was taken before a military court. He objected. He said if he had broken a law, he should be tried by a civilian court. He demanded this as his constitutional right. The military judges rejected his argument. They found him guilty, and they sentenced him to remain in a Union military prison until the end of the war. People throughout the North were angry. Many did not support Clement Vallandigham's ideas, but they supported his right to speak freely. President Lincoln could approve or reject Vallandigham's sentence. His decision would show which issue was more important, the citizens' right to free speech or national security.
Lincoln was a good politician and a smart lawyer. He found an unexpected way to deal with the problem. He neither approved nor rejected the sentence. He changed it. Lincoln ordered Vallandigham to be turned over to the Confederate Army. Then he explained that Vallandigham had not been arrested for criticizing the government. His arrest was made, Lincoln said, because he was trying, with some success, to prevent men from entering the army. He was urging soldiers already in the army to leave it. Mr. Vallandigham was not arrested because he was damaging the political chances of the administration or the interests of the commanding general, but because he was damaging the army, upon which the life of the nation depends. The Confederates welcomed the anti-war leader. They helped him get to Canada. Vallandigham continued his anti-war campaign from there.
President Lincoln was troubled by the anti-war movement and violent opposition to the draft laws. He felt he had to make citizens understand why such laws were necessary. He prepared a speech which explained his thoughts. "There can be no army without men," Lincoln wrote. "Men can be had only with their permission or without it. We can no longer get enough men willingly. So there is a draft. If you dispute this and declare that men are still willing to serve in the army, then prove it by volunteering yourselves in large numbers. Then I will give up the draft."
Lincoln never gave this speech. He felt it was too direct. Instead, he gave a different kind of speech to the people of the Union. "You want peace," Lincoln said, "and you blame me that we do not have it. But how can we get it? There are but three ways possible. First, to put down the Southern rebellion by force of arms. This I am trying to do. Are you for it? If you are, then we are so far agreed. If you are not for it, a second way is to give up the Union. I am against this. Are you for the Union? If you are, you should say so clearly. If you are not for force and not for dissolving the Union, there only remains some kind of compromise. I do not believe any such compromise is possible."
Politicians urged President Lincoln to investigate the anti-war protests in New York to learn who had led them. He refused. Lincoln believed that starting an investigation would be like lighting a barrel of gunpowder. He already was fighting a bitter struggle against rebels in the South. He did not want to fight the people of the North, too. Southern leaders were pleased with the Copperheads' anti-war movement. Confederate General Robert E. Lee saw it as a sign of weakness in the Northern war effort. He also saw it as an opening for a military victory. That will be our story next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Larry West and Tony Riggs. Transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs are online, along with historical images, at voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.